When you go on a long drive, the last thing you want is a problem that leads to an unexpected... ...delay to your journey. So do a few simple vehicle checks before setting off, including tyres, oil, water and fuel. Highways England.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Jason Lukart, and this is the first episode of the Let's Go Tribe Talk podcast. I have no idea how to expect this to go. Hopefully there's more than four of you listening. I'll bring on a guest in a few minutes. Plenty to talk about right now between the awful, awful stretch of baseball the Indians have been playing recently, in the draft, maybe getting to Chris Perez. Like I said, we'll see. I became an Indians fan way back in 1986. My T-ball team as a little kid was the Indians, and that just sort of stuck, which I guess is pretty unfortunate. But it was back 86, 87, the years that led to Major League, pretty terrible baseball. I figure when I have my guests on, it'll be nice to hear a little bit about how they became Indians fans. And my first guest this week is going to be someone familiar to most of you, Ryan Richards, who is the editor of Let's Go Tribe and the main contributor of content. So he does the heavy lifting over there. And I'm going to bring him in to kick this thing off. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, welcome, Jason. Yeah, I know it's the first time for both of us, so let's... let's get this going.
Yeah, I agree. Rather than starting with the current state of affairs, which is so miserable, why don't we try to start with the glass half full and maybe talk about last week's Major League draft. How did you feel about what the Indians were able to do?
Well, the Major League draft is kind of different than a lot of the other sports because, you know, with NFL and NBA, you see the people that your team drafts, you know, every week. And for a lot of us, even most hardcore fans, they probably never seen, I mean, if the Indians had drafted a college player, they likely wouldn't have seen him play. And especially, you know, that they drafted a high school player, they definitely didn't see him play. So it's a little bit different for baseball fans. And, you know, plus it takes even the good players 3 or 4 years for them to get to the majors. I mean, if you look at, you know, the 2009 draft, that was the 2008 draft was, 2009 draft was Jason Kipnis, and he's really just getting going in his career. And the year before that, 2008, was Lonnie Chisenhall, and he's still in Columbus. So it's going to take some time, but that doesn't mean it's not important. Because
absolutely. I mean, major importance. I think for me, I don't mind, for whatever reason, I don't mind so much not having seen them yet. It is hard to keep the perspective on, like you said, even the best guys you're looking at a couple of years before they're really going to be making any sort of contribution in Cleveland. I was happy with Clint Frazier as the first pick. I think it's easier to get excited about someone who's seems to have a really high ceiling and who has a higher ceiling than the high school player of the year. I know there's a lot of talk about them drafting Colin Moran out of North Carolina. And again, like you were saying, we don't know that much about these guys, but I was able to talk myself into the idea that, he'll probably be a decent player, but he won't be a great one. And it's hard to be really excited about someone who you think will probably be, you know, a decent player.
Yeah, I mean, you like to dream with these players, and if basically the dream ceiling is basically average MLB player, and granted, Moran could turn out to be another Evan Longoria for all we know. That's how much, you know, it's such an inexact science, even at the higher end of the draft. But, you know, when you see someone like Frazier, who's kind of has a lot of basically just about every tool you can have, except probably right now batting average or, you know, contact, you know, the sky's the limit. So you get excited, especially when you're picking that high. You want to be drafting players that have the capability of becoming those all-stars.
Right.
You know, and given, you know, how the Indians have performed in the draft the last, you know, decade plus, I think, you know, it's good to see them kind of rolling the dice on some players. And definitely, it's, I mean, so far it's worked out with Francisco Lindor, but, you know, it's good to see them kind of go into that high upside pick again.
Yeah, I agree. And it'll be a while before he's anywhere close to Cleveland, but he certainly, he's like you said, he's the kind of player it's easy to dream about him or wish cast on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it seems like they drafted a lot of pitchers. They didn't have another pick until, what was it, like 78 or 79?
Yeah, it was their pick in the third round.
But it feels like they took a lot of pitchers after that, which they certainly need pitching. So I feel like if you take enough of them, the odds are a couple of them stick eventually.
Yeah, obviously they didn't have their second round pick. And they also had a competitive balance pick after the second round, but they gave both of them because they signed Swisher and Bourne, which is a good trade-off, I'd say.
The Bourne one was sort of a unique situation because so many other teams were looking at giving up, you know, the 15th. Or I think it was the Mets wanted to sign him, but they would have had to give up the number 11 overall pick. And the Indians, because they had already signed Swisher, were looking at only having to give up a much less valuable draft choice, which probably made the difference.
Yeah, and actually because Pittsburgh didn't sign Mark Appel last year when they drafted him, they caused the Mets pick to go down to number 11. Now,
we're arguing with MLB that they should still be allowed to consider it a top 10 pick, but MLB did not side with them, which...
Yeah, so if the, you know, if the Pirates hadn't, you know, had signed Appel, the Mets might have been, you know, on Michael Bourne, and he might have been a New York Met right now. So,
right.
Giving up the second and the competitive balance is probably a good trade-off for players of that caliber. But,
yeah, I think
if the Indians had been picking number 15 or something, they might not have signed Bourne. So,
right.
So that, and
well,
I guess in a way
they were so terrible last year that they had a much higher pick.
And that's the way you want it to work, because you want the, you know, it, if you're, you know, like, you know, balance or having the bad teams having the possibility, even a small market team having the possibility, that advantage of signing a big free agent, because the other kind of bigger market, more successful teams don't want to give up their first round pick. That's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I do too. Certainly it worked out well this time. Although I guess we'll see how Bourne and Swisher do for the next 4 years. I'm not thrilled to pick Swisher at the moment.
I guess we'll get to him later. Getting back to the pitchers, just from what I read, Indians have kind of said that, you know, those are the guys on their board when they select them. But if you look at, what some of the pitching has done at the lower levels, I guess you would understand why they had picked, you know, what, 7 or 8 straight pitchers after Frazier. Mitch Brown has been hurt. Dylan Baker hasn't been great. And some of the other kind of high school arms we haven't really seen in the full season leagues yet. So you can certainly understand there's kind of a gap between kind of the group at Columbus and pretty much the bottom of the organization right now. So,
right.
So, obviously going through the list, obviously Dace Keim, who is obviously you'll be able to see in the College World Series coming up. He's their, you know, their top college pitcher taken. So, and then you have, you know, some kind of a mixture of college arms, high school arms, and kind of relievers and starters. So the two guys at 5 and 6 will be kind of tough signs because they're committed to pretty high profile programs. I think Brady's committed to Florida and Casey's committed to, I think, Texas A&M. So it'll take probably over slot value to get them to sign. But last year they were able to sign everybody. So I think, you know, it's given the benefit of the doubt there.
Right. Did you see Dace Keim, who someone was pointing out his name? He sounds like a Jedi Knight from Star Wars. But last night on one of the posts you had on Let's Go Tribe, probably the one about him being drafted, did you see that his aunt came in and commented?
That's pretty cool. That number one, that like his aunt would pick Let's Go Tribe to kind of, you know, post about her nephew, you know, and so that's cool.
My immediate reaction was to then go back and double check the rest of the comments and make sure, not that anyone would know anything about him, but I was like, oh gosh, I really hope no one said anything mean or horrible about him.
And well, it's kind of funny.
Came in and saw it.
It's kind of funny. I was just thinking about, like, what if the Indians had drafted Colin Moran and someone's relative or whatever had come across the site, like, we hate this guy. No, it's – and that's what's kind of funny about, you know, doing this. And it's kind of the new social media aspect of things where people are so close. You know, you have people, athletes on Twitter. You have Chris Perez on Twitter, I guess, until at least a couple weeks ago. And so it's just kind of funny how close everything gets.
And I feel like people feel obligated to have opinions about everything now too. People have a much harder time just saying, gosh, I don't know, I hope it works out well. You know, people, you're able to read so much more about people than you used to be. And so you feel like you're sort of informed about them. And then we all just kind of spout off like we really know what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I certainly don't count myself a draft expert by any stretch of the match. I try to watch, you know, as many college games as possible, but it's during the baseball season.
Right.
So, again, all this comes with a grain of salt, and a lot of this is based on other resources that are out there that know a heck of a lot more than I do about college players. So,
They drafted Clint Frazier, and my first reaction was, wow, he's got really red hair. He was one of the top prospects, and I knew his name and kind of his profile, but I don't think I'd seen a picture or video of him.
No, yeah, exactly. It's not like, you know, kind of like the NBA draft, which they're ramping up for. They have video, you know, lots of video. They probably, you know, people on, you know, Fear the Sword have probably seen, probably, you know, at least several games of each player the Cavs are talking about. And with the MLB draft, it's even number five, you know, you basically see some grainy video of him, you know, basically some, you know, some high school games and some all-star games. And that's all you have to go on.
He might be striking out some 14-year-old who's batting .210 on the year. I'd be lying if I could say, oh, yeah, look at his mechanics. He's clearly a fantastic pitcher. I can't, you know, break something like that down.
And that's part of the reason why, I mean, it's hard taking a high school player versus a college player, because a college player, I mean, you kind of know what he's going to be. A high school player, you have to really project. And, you know, and that's part of why I think maybe the Indians, you know, have kind of stayed away from those players, but at the same time, those high school players are usually the players that turn in, you know, that have the highest ceilings, usually.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a much bigger risk versus reward, but I feel like a team in the Indians' position financially in terms of market size and things like that, you've got to hit some home runs if you're going to be a competitive team. You've got to have a lot of things go right around the same time, and if a guy busts, he busts. But they're not going to do very well if their best draft choices are just turning into decent players. They're mostly, if they're going to have a star, they're generally going to have to come from the draft. The Michael Bourne and Nick Swisher double signing was incredible, but it's not going to be the norm.
Absolutely not. I would not expect another Swisher Bourne signing, you know, next year or maybe the year after. So exactly. They're going to have to. They have to build through the draft, and that's kind of what's been their downfall. You know, the 2007 was great, but they couldn't really sustain it because there's nobody coming in behind them. Those players that they got via trades. And it's really hard to maintain a good organization by using the trade route for everything.
Right, by swindling other GMs.
Yeah, and that goes without saying that you're trading good players. you know,
right.
like a Cliff Lee, which really hasn't really worked out. CC Sabathia,
right.
who kind of worked out. So, you know, and you can't expect, you know, getting Asdrubal Cabrera and Shinsu Chu for
right.
basically, you know, a first place platoon, you know, every,
yeah.
you know, all the time for Ben
Carlos
Busta,
Santana
Ben
for Casey Blake. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're never going to be that good.
Right.
So the draft is, and that's where you have to get your stars, and through obviously, you know, international signings too. But because the Indians have been so poor at getting stars via the draft, it's kind of set the groundwork for, you know, for the last, I don't know, 10 years.
Yeah. And it's, you know, hard to know how much of it is it bad drafting, is it bad player development. I don't know how any outsider tries to pretend they know the difference between the two.
It's really hard to separate the draft pick from the development, because a lot of times they go hand in hand. Obviously,
right.
you need players with a talent, but you also need – they're not going to be major league ready. You have to develop them into major league players.
Right.
So it's hard to know. But regardless, they just haven't been able to develop, draft and develop good major league players.
Well, acknowledging that we don't really know much about any of these guys, all in all, are you happy with how the draft turned out, given the picks that the Indians had?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, pick number 05 overall is gonna define the draft one way or the other. So, and I was happy that they chose kind of the high ceiling guy versus kind of the high floor guy, so to speak. So, and you know, after that, who knows?
Yeah.
If they, you know, assuming they sign most of the players in that top 10, that should help, you know, the pitching depth in the organization. Kind of like, you know, the third round pick sounds like a guy who could be kind of like hate to compare him, but kind of like the Justin Masterson type, either could be a really good reliever or a good starter, or, you know, in Masterson's case, he kind of went beyond good to some, you know, in
yeah.
some ways.
Yeah. I think Keim was a relief pitcher for a while in college, and then they put him in the rotation this year and he's done really well. So hopefully that sticks, because obviously
yeah.
you'd rather get a good starting pitcher than a good relief pitcher.
Yeah, you can always find kind of two-pitch guys, you know, kind of later rounds. So
right.
obviously where they picked him, they think he can be a starter.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. That must be their sense of things. All right, well, we at some point should probably discuss the current situation, as ugly as it is. The Indians have now lost 7 games in a row and 15 of their last 19, I think. And
yeah,
I was digging around last night for teams that there was in the game thread last night. Someone was saying, oh, you know, like every team goes through a stretch like that. And then other people were saying, no, I think this goes beyond kind of a normal slump. And I looked up, and over the last 4 seasons, 2009 to 2012, 37 different teams had a 4-15 or worse stretch. And obviously 19 games is an arbitrary number that I'm just picking because it happens to be where the Indians are at on the slump. But 4-15 or worse over 19 games. You've got 37 teams in the last 4 years. None of them made the playoffs. Only 3 of them had a winning record, and the best of those was the 2011 Red Sox, who were seen as having had one of the worst collapses in baseball history.
Yeah,
and the average
was in September.
Record of those, the average record of those 37 teams was 70-92. And I would certainly take the over on that for the Indians this year, but it's hard to see a team going through this stretch and picture them as a team winning, you know, 85-90 games and making the playoffs, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, because obviously the Indians are playing bad regardless of the schedule. I think I wrote down a couple of things. Their team line over the last 14 days is 224, 288, 341. That isn't going to cut. I don't care who you're facing.
No.
And their overall pitching is 5.26, and they've allowed 14 home runs. And the opposing batters are hitting 290, 358, 455. That's close to little over 900 OPS. So it's not that they're blowing games. They've blown a couple games. It's not that their pitching's been bad. It's not that their hitting's been bad. It's been all three at one point or another.
Right.
And, you know, and part of it is because they've played probably the toughest stretch of schedule that maybe anyone in Major League Baseball will play this year. So,
right.
And so it's a little bit of both. I mean, I don't think they'd be going to have this record if they're playing the Astros, the Blue Jays, the White Sox.
Yeah, the Twins. And they'll get their chance
Twins.
At those
so,
teams.
But it is kind of telling, though, that these are the teams that they faced in the last couple of weeks that they're going to have to beat out for a playoff spot.
Right.
So it is, and it is, you know, it's telling that they've been so bad. So it's part of, you know, what their hot streak, you know, before this, they probably weren't that good. This streak
right.
Now, they won't be this bad. So they're. I think the sense of it is that I think they're kind of a mediocre team this year.
Which is unfortunate, you know? Because, I mean, mediocre is better than they were last year, but after bringing in the guys they did, I know a lot of fans were, you know, maybe not even the playoffs, but, I mean, they're only two games under 500, and I guess that's probably not that far off where, at least where I expect them to be this year. I think in my predictions, I had them down for 82 wins, and to go
yeah,
through this stretch, they'll only be, what, two games under and I think 5.5 games back. It could certainly be worse. It's just, it's hard going through a stretch like this as a fan.
Oh, yeah. Well, this one feels a little bit different than last April, which was a similar stretch. Because last August, it was, I don't know, for whatever reason, it just felt so much worse. Because at least in this stretch, they're in games. Last year, it was everyone was getting blown out. It was bad to watch. And of course, you know, now there's still 100, you know, 100 some games left in the season, and there's still time to, you know, right the ship. But
I'm hoping the Tigers starting rotation decides in mass to retire.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only reason, really. There. the Indians are going to have a better record than the Tigers. It's, I mean, the Indians faced their, what, seventh starting pitcher on Sunday and got shut down. Their sixth pitcher, Drew Smyly, would be like their second starter right now.
Right.
So
of their top four would be the Indians' ace. I mean, Masterson
absolutely.
Closed the fifth, probably, but I think ultimately you probably take, I mean, really, in the entire division, I think Chris Sale on the White Sox and James Shields on the Royals are the only pitchers who would crack the top four of the Tigers rotation. It's unreal how much pitching they've been able to put together.
Yeah. It's almost surprising that the Tigers are only five and a half games ahead. Cause I mean, I could certainly see the Tigers kind of doing what the Indians did to the AL Central with 95 or 96. Cause
absolutely.
The rest of the division, I guess the Royals have been a disappointment because they have so much talent.
Right. They had the top-rated farm system from 2009 to 2011, and it hasn't panned out.
Yeah, exactly. Then they went out and got Shields and, you know, supposedly kind of improved their rotation, which they've pretty much done. But that, you know, the farm system, which all the players got to the majors, they just haven't started to hit yet.
Right. Well, I think, the Tigers last year weren't in first place most of the season. The Indians were early, and then the White Sox were for June, July, and into August. And then the Tigers kind of got their act together just in the nick of time. Their 5.5 game lead right now is a bigger lead than any team in the Central has had since the end of 2011. And
yeah,
they have the talent to pull away and run away from the division, but we'll see. Maybe they won't.
Yeah, I think probably they can underachieve and win 90 games. So,
right.
And it should
Which
still.
Which is probably
what,
I mean, last year you'd look at them probably as a team as underachievers, yet there they were in the World Series.
Yeah, and against and playing this division, when you play, you know, 18, 19 games against everyone, it's it'll have to be like several major injuries for them to finish.
Yeah, I tend to still think the wild card is a better bet, just because, you know, the teams don't have as much talent as Detroit, but we'll see. There's a lot of good teams in the AL right now. The Red Sox have really bounced back, and the A's I thought would fall off more from last year, but they're still playing well. It's the Angels really who are struggling a lot, but right now any playoff spot feels like a long way away, but I suppose we'll see.
Yeah, and the wild card.
Oh, go ahead.
And the wild card is kind of difficult too, because now the Indians will have to, for them to challenge for the wild card. I guess we've already declared them not winning the division, I guess. But the wild card.
Detroit's rotation retires, which they might.
Yeah, you never know. But probably not. But the wild card is going to be difficult, because they've already lost to most of their competitors. I mean, except for Oakland. Obviously that New York obviously went 5-1 against them. Tampa Bay, they've lost a season series to them. So in Baltimore, they haven't played yet. In Boston. So all those the top three there, and they haven't played Baltimore yet. So it's going to be an uphill climb for them, but. But again, I don't think they're going to tank the season like last year. Of course, I could be wrong.
No, I don't either.
But their schedule will start to get better after this week, and I guess we'll really see after they kind of get into the kind of the regular AL Central kind of the midget kind of schedule, the tallest midget schedule. So that see who can be second place, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose we're looking forward to our games with the Royals and Twins and White Sox, and they're probably looking forward to their games with us. So it's been tough having last week Cabrera getting injured, and who knows how long he'll be out, and now Zach McAllister on the DL.
Yeah.
Hopefully those guys, you know.
McAllister, you kind of get concerned, because he kind of had a similar injury to what Alex White had and, of course, Adam Miller a while ago. But I guess they're saying that they're shutting him down just to make sure it doesn't turn into a full-blown thing where he needs surgery on it. But I mean, it's a major concern. McAllister is, I mean, he's kind of stepped up and become, kind of that solid to good major league starter. And if he goes down,
Indians are in short supply of those.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a concern. I mean, Cabrera, it's a quad. I guess he'll take, who knows with those types of injuries, because baseball players, hamstrings and quads and everything. I guess it depends on the player. But
I mean, Hanley Ramirez on the Dodgers now, I think, he played two games, went back in the DL, came back, played in one game, and now I don't think he's started for the last four games. But his first injury was he broke his thumb in the World Baseball Classic, but then he strained something in his leg, and it's been, I think, 3 months since then, and he can't get back to 100%.
Yeah, that's one of those injuries where you want to make really, really sure that you're fully healthy again, because, the first time you try to book it down first base, and, you might be out even a longer period of time. But the good thing is that Indians have a solid backup this year, and in Avilas. And if that that would have happened last year, who knows how they what the shortstop would have looked like? Because
people would have been calling for them to call up Lindor at 18 years old.
Yeah, when he was in Lake County. There we go, County to the majors. I've seen some people on Twitter saying, will Lindor call him up? That hopefully that got quiet down, because even though he might be the best prospect in baseball by the end of the year, with all the people ahead of him going to the majors, graduating out, and it's way too early to call him up.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
So it's good that they have a solid backup in Aviles, because obviously Juan Diaz has done nothing at AAA.
Right.
So if they didn't trade for him, he'd be the shortstop right now.
Well, that would be terrible. Let's be glad we don't have to really think about that.
Well, knock on wood.
Speaking of Lindor, there's been a little talk. He's just recently named to the Carolina League All-Star team, so he'll be playing in that game in a couple of weeks with, I think there's three other guys in the Mudcats going to that game. We've talked a little bit at Let's Go Tribe. Do you think he will be promoted to Akron after the All-Star game? Do you think he should be promoted to Akron?
Yeah, should be and will he? I guess it's two different questions. I guess if you look at the contract situation, as Rubel Cabrera is signed through next year, I don't think they'll trade him. Who knows? Maybe they'll make Aviles the shortstop. But you would think if your time frame is that you want Lindor to take over, you know, kind of call Lindor up at the tail end of 2014 and he'd be the starter at 2015, then maybe your schedule gets, you know, bumped up a little bit. So you're aggressive with promoting him to Akron for the second half and then kind of working it from there in 2014, depending on how he does this year. Or you could take the opinion that, you know, it'd be better served to spend the whole year in Carolina, then start 2014 in Akron, and then maybe kind of do half and half that year with him going to Columbus at the end of 2014.
Right.
I think his defense shouldn't be an issue. Defense has probably never been an issue with him. It's how his bat will adjust to, you know,
right,
to higher level pitching. And when obviously, I think someone brought up a good point in the thread last night that, you know, it's an 18 league in the Carolina League, so you face everyone a lot. You play everyone a lot. And
right,
making adjustments is obviously a big part of becoming a major league player, because once video gets out, everyone knows what your weaknesses are. So that, you know, it might be something said, you know, something good said about that.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a classic example of something I feel like I should have a strong opinion about, and I can't quite bring myself to.
No,
I won't be. As long as he keeps playing well, I'm not going to be bent out of shape about whether it's in Carolina or Akron the rest of this year.
This isn't Lindor.
The front office's judgment with what they do.
Yeah, this isn't Lindor in Columbus heating things up, because then that would be a totally different conversation.
Right.
You know, call him up now. You call him up to Cleveland. Basically, it's two different minor league levels, and so he's not going to get called up this year. He's probably not going to get called up much next year. It's just a matter of how you want to manage his development.
Right. Before we go, the other big topic for the Indians last week was Chris Perez and his arrest for, well, I don't know, does it count as an arrest? Charged with drug possession anyway.
Yeah, it was, I'm definitely not a legal expert, so, but apparently by just judging by it.
Is there a less surprising member of the team to have something like this happen to?
I don't know if
there was a pool at Let's Go Tribe of who's going to get busted for marijuana during the season, most people would have been putting their money on Perez.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily being arrested for what he got arrested for. It's just being in some kind of trouble, whether it be yelling things at Oakland fans in the bleachers or ripping the fans or whatever. Of course, it's been a while since he's had his name in the headlines, so maybe he was due for that. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you saw that. I think Paul Hoyne said that last winter they tried, put some feelers out to trade him, but really didn't get that much interest.
Yeah, during the off season, you know, in comment discussions and people like, oh, we should trade him for. I felt like a lot of fans had a really inflated sense of his trade value, that there aren't really that many GMs who are that concerned with the proven closer label. And that, you know, when you look at his other stats, they don't really stand out as a relief pitcher. You know, he's gotten the job done well enough, I suppose, but it's been about 3 years since he was really a much more than okay, pretty good relief pitcher. this certainly isn't going to help any.
Yeah, he's been. I mean, he racked up the saves. Was it 2 years ago? But if you look at kind of his peripherals, it's not great. Not like Craig Kimbrel great.
Right.
And obviously the contract has a lot to do with it, because if you're trading for Prez, you'll be paying, was it $7 million or a little bit, or is it more than that this year? And plus another bump
this year.
Yes. And plus another arbitration bump next year. And, so that's probably obviously why if they did get some offers, it probably wasn't for very much.
Right.
So,
and it's just
going to
be
for
less now. I don't think he's going anywhere, because he's not going to bring anything back.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It's like you don't want to just non-tender him, but he's probably going to be getting, assuming he comes back and pitches reasonably well, if the shoulder's okay, and he finishes the season reasonably well, he's going to get another couple $1 million more in arbitration. And I don't know. I don't think the Indians are going to want to take that salary on next year.
I don't either. I don't think the Indians should be paying any relief pitcher $9 million a year or whatever. It's going to be much less one who's not particularly good.
It's one of those things. If you are going to pay someone that much, you better be, a contender going for it this year or next year. And but even if they are going for next year, I don't see any reason why they have to have him on their team.
I don't either. The money can be better spent.
Yeah,
the bullpen is the last thing to spend money on.
Oh yeah, especially for a team like the Indians, who are probably going to have be looking to try to extend Justin Masterson, and several other players are getting big bumps. I think I'm trying to remember who it was. Was it Bourne or Swisher's salary was pretty low this year? It's going to get a big bump next year.
Yeah.
So obviously they're not going to have the flexibility that they had last year in signing, big free agents. It'll be kind of tough to kind of fit everyone that they have on next year's payroll.
Right.
And Perez, he's kind of unnecessary. I hate to say unnecessary, but you can definitely put his salary to better use.
The last thing to be mentioned about it was the delivery, that it was delivered to his dog. Is that correct?
That's right. And about 5 seconds.
Who you're friends with on Twitter, I hear.
Yeah, like 5 seconds after that, all that big story, all the details, the lurid details, I guess, got released. I guess this president's dog now has a Twitter account. So you can check up, see what the president's dog is doing. Apparently he's a not very well behaved family dog, but you'll be able to see what's going on.
Well, Ryan,
thanks for joining us today and
helping us kick this off. I'm sure I'll have you back fairly often to talk things over as the season goes by and then the off season too. Anything else you'd like to tell the listeners today?
No, just hope this turns out to be somewhat okay. And so maybe this will become a regular thing.
Somewhat okay. That's the best we can hope for.
Yeah, we're Cleveland fans. Somewhat okay is what we hope for.
All right. Well, thanks again, Ryan.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Well, I guess I'll wrap it up. I think this went fairly well. I babbled a little bit at the front, so to avoid babbling at the end, I think I'll just say goodbye, and we'll see you again soon. Let's go, Tribe!
Motorways are becoming smarter to help traffic flow smoother. When traffic conditions are good, the national speed limit will apply. But when traffic becomes heavy, the speed limit can be reduced. So, if you see a lower speed limit, slow down and stay within it. By following speed limits, we'll all be doing our bit to keep the traffic flowing. Highways England, making motorways smarter. For more information, search for Smart Motorways online.